Hey guys, welcome back to the Big Move Podcast. I'm your host, Em, and this week I'm sitting down and chatting with Erna Leon.
Just try to familiarize yourself and don't rush into things and meet people, build relationships.
Erna is a New York fashion designer, stylist, and creative director and founder of Mercer 7, which is a London-based curated women's wear concept and collaborative lifestyle platform. Growing up in Georgia, then moving to New York City before ultimately moving to London with her husband, Erna is no stranger to making big moves and taking risks in her career. At just 18, she walked into the Halston office in New York City with no appointment, asked for an internship, and got the job. On this episode, she's talking to us about building a capsule wardrobe, shopping smarter, and her transition from working in fashion design to becoming the face of her own personal brand. That's enough from me. Let's get into my chat with Erna. Erna, hi. Welcome to the Big Move Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Erna, I'm so pleased to have you. We have known each other for a while here in London, just from the blogosphere, I'm going to call it.
yes,
but,
exactly.
But for our audience, do you mind giving us just a brief background on who you are?
So I'm Armenian, born in Georgia, New Yorker turned Londoner. So basically all over the place when it comes to where I'm from. And I was always in the creative field. So I started my journey in arts, and it started at the age of 3. I think partly because I grew up in a family full of musicians, my dad, my mom, my brother. So I guess a creative industry was a natural, progression for me. So I started with art and ended up in fashion.
Amazing. I love the breakdown. So on this podcast, I love to hone in on our guests' big moves. So whether it's moving to the new country or city or launching the brand or the business, it's like those big transitions in life, I feel like, really shape us and our stories. So I know you just mentioned that you're Armenian, but can you just back up and tell us like where you grew up?
I grew up in all over the place, really. I was born and grew up in Georgia until the age of 8, and then moved to Germany because my dad was a musician and he's a trumpet player. And we moved there for a little bit, then back to Georgia, then back to Germany. And it was just kind of back and forth throughout my teenage years. And then when my brother moved to America, he moved to New York to pursue his American dream, as some 19-year-olds do. 3 years later, we were reunited. At that point, I was 16 or 17 years old, an art student, ready to go into fashion. And, you know, I moved to the new country. In the beginning, I really resented it, but it was the best thing ever. And just kind of, I call New York my home. It's my first home that I, you know, have the best memories in, really.
Absolutely. I feel like you and I definitely have a lot of love for New York in very different ways. But I guess not to fast forward too much, but I know that you and I, similarly, we moved to London. You left, you know, New York City, your family, you know, everything that you knew to come live in London with your partner. So fast forward to now, can you sort of take us back to like what that time period was like for you when you kind of left everything that you knew and decided to move to London with your family?
Well, it was certainly a big move for me. I feel like, so it was 2010 and I was 30 years old, and I feel like everything was perfect in my life at that point. I had a brilliant job with Calvin Klein Jeans. I experienced what it was like to have my own brand in New York City. I had a lot of friends, brilliant nightlife, and I felt like I knew everybody. New York was my New York in a way. I lived in West Village and everything was, you know, the American dream basically. And it all kind of changed when we moved to London. We got married in July 2010, and 3 months later, I found myself, you know, in a new city. And it was exciting at the time, of course. But the deal was, let's experience it for couple of years, see if you like it, and then if anything, we'll go back to New York. Those 2 years came, we never spoke about moving back, and at that point, I got pregnant with my first child, my son Luca, and yeah, I guess I started kind of growing my roots in London from that point on and finding my feet again. And when I first moved to London, for the first 6 months, I was basically roaming, you know, East London streets and Shoreditch and kind of, you know, going to every museum and gallery possible. Because I didn't really have that many friends here. And I think that was my biggest, I guess, yeah, it was the hardest thing to kind of finding your own feet and your friends and getting a new job as a designer. And it was like, it was very different and it was challenging. But thankfully, my husband's friends from, you know, sixth form and uni, they're all lovely and their wives were really great. So I kind of lucked out. I inherited his friends in a way. So that was really, really cool. And we had some great times. And, you know, then I ended up finding a design job. And so after I became a mom, it was what, like 2012, you know, the world changed even more. And it you know, there were highs and lows, like in every kind of motherhood, especially being a new mom without, you know, my mom and dad around. And, you know, my husband's family is in Cambridge. So we were by ourselves trying to figure out what we're doing as new parents. And, you know, for 3 years, I had another daughter. And then for 3 years, I was basically, you know, a stay-at-home mom taking care of my babies. And I quit my job. And throughout my motherhood journey, I realized that, you know, I wanted to work for myself because even though people think that, you know, being a fashion designer is the most glamorous job or one of the most glamorous jobs in the world, but the reality is very different. You have really long hours. You work really long hours. It's not exactly 9 to 5, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, I think quitting my design job for 3.5 years made me, I guess, pushed me towards owning my own business and setting up my own thing and what it's now known as Mercer 7. So yeah, it was a transition, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And there's so much to break down there, but it's like, I want to comment on what a whirlwind for you and so many like big life changes that all came your way, which seemed like all at the same time. It must have been a lot to go through. I guess for listeners, do you have any advice to offer anybody like moving to the new city? I guess with what you're going through emotional, any advice at all that you could offer?
I think go explore, don't rush into things, meet new people, maybe meet other expats that would always help. I did not. I always was, you know, I kind of inherited that group of friends that my husband had. But if I didn't, I think I would, I don't know, join some forums and meet up with some other expats, moms that are, you know, New Yorkers turned Londoners. Yeah, just explore and don't rush into things, you know, find your feet. We've been here for 12 years now and we moved nearly, I think it was 7 times that we moved, which is ridiculous. So I feel like I've experienced so many different neighborhoods in London to just kind of find me and where I was the happiest. And I think naturally we moved to Shoreditch because it was kind of the most similar neighborhood to West Village and East Village at that time, 10 years ago or 12 years ago. So yeah, just try to familiarize yourself and don't rush into things and meet people, build relationships.
So Erna, to back up, and I feel like in telling your story, we really need to start with your amazing background in fashion and how you sort of got your career start. Can you give us like a brief breakdown there?
Yeah. So, I started back in Georgia, so I was a fine arts student then I remember when we were moving to New York, we spoke to, you know, I was chatting to my brother, Eric, who was already in America at the time. And he said, well, if you want to be a starving artist, you're more than welcome to continue whatever you're doing now, meaning fine arts. but if you want to be successful or do something, maybe you should reconsider your future career. And, you know, at that time I was only, oh God, how old was I? 13? So imagine having this conversation at 13. So at that point, I was like, oh, what should we do? So my mom talked to my fine arts teacher at that time, and she was like, well, fashion design is becoming really popular at the time. So we're talking 1993, right? And in Georgia, so former USSR. And she's like, oh, fashion design is becoming really popular. How about, you know, she becomes a fashion designer? And she showed me some pictures and illustrations, and she showed me all this kind of like fashion shows of, you know, old school models. And it was just, you know, this world of fashion for me was quite new. I always loved fashion, and I always would, you know, redo my mom's old Wrangler jacket, like denim jacket, into, you know, make it my own, or cut my mom's old vintage dresses. But I never thought of it as a career. I was so dead set on becoming a fine arts student and, you know, being an artist. To make long story short, I started studying fashion design, and I was preparing for, you know, academy in Georgia. It was one of the most, you know, the best known kind of like biggest academies for fashion students and fine arts and everything. And at that point, we were also working on relocating to America, to New York, where my brother, we haven't seen him for 3 years. So it's a very typical kind of immigrant story, I feel like, as well. So after getting into academy, a few months later, I found myself in New York, not speaking English at all. Part of, you know, me thanking American TV for beginning kind of basic knowledge of English. It was so funny because I thought I knew some English, but then I turned on American TV and I didn't know anything. It's like, what are they talking about? Because obviously American slang and American kind of, you know, the way they speak, it was very new to me and I couldn't understand anything. So I did a bit of research. My brother's friend helped me go into FIT and get some, you know, exam forms. And FIT is Fashion Institute of Technology. It's one of the biggest, you know, universities for fashion designers. And yeah, basically started fashion design in FIT. At that point, I was 17 years old, or maybe 18. And as they say, the rest is history. it was quite funny, actually, because so after moving to New York, I went into FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology, and I got my bachelor's degree in fashion there. I've been working in the industry since I was 18 years old, starting with my very first internship at Holston. And there is a very funny story there. It just shows how, I guess, naive and fearless kids can be. And at 18, you are a kid, aren't you? I certainly was.
Agree. Absolutely agree.
Right? Yeah, I know. I see now 18-year-olds and I feel like, oh my God, you are so grown up. At 18, I mean, I didn't know anything. I thought I did, but I looked like a kid. I mean, I was a kid. But I basically knew about Holston. I knew about, you know, little black dresses and all the, you know, Holston heritage. And I remember going into Yellow Pages. Yep, we were without iPhones and internet at the time. I think I did have a computer, but it was one of those like, 1, 2, 3.
Sure. Yellow Pages. We're really throwing exactly. It back. I love it.
Yeah, I'm really throwing back. So I remember looking, you know, where the kind of fashion design district was in New York, and where Halston HQ was, like, so Halston head office. And I found the building, I found the floor that he was at, or, you know, the company. Obviously, he was long gone at that point. And I remember going into this building, and there was a reception area. And I just kind of like sneaked past the reception area. And you know those elevators, the lifts, where you have to have a code, like, where are you going? And I remember just somebody asking what floor I'm going at. And I said it, and just by a fluke, I ended up on that floor. So it was a bit of luck there. And I came into the reception of Halston, and she's like, oh, do you have an appointment? I don't think I even knew what appointment was at that time. All I had with me was this giant portfolio, not the portfolio that you would normally bring to a design interview. It was full of proper kind of fine arts illustrations of, you know, fashion models in those ball gowns. So nothing that I would bring to an interview right now, knowing what the fashion industry looks like and how it operates. But anyway, so she kind of, she looked at me like up and down, like, who is this crazy girl showing up without an appointment? She's like, give me a second, please. She called to what was Kevin Hall's assistant at that time, Dominic Sabella. And she's like, oh, there's this girl. And I think she's interested in a job, but I'm not sure. So he's coming out of his office. He's like, hi, can I help you? And there is me, like, with my broken English, basically saying, hi, this is my portfolio and I would love to work here. And he's like looking at me with this like eyes. He's like, can you give me a second? Let just talk to my creative director. And it was Kevin Hall. And he, you know, I was waiting for another 15 minutes and he came out with Kevin and we went to this conference room and he opened my portfolio, which was like full of those illustrations. And he was like, how about an internship? We will pay you, I think it was $70 or $80. I cannot quite remember. Like, let's put it at $70 a week. And it will cover your transportation and food. So like lunch break. And I was like, okay. I was so eager to start somewhere. At that point, I was living with my mom and dad and my brother. So that's how my kind of journey began. And after that, I started FIT and, you know, learned English a little more. And I learned the basics of how to cut patterns and, you know, how fashion industry works. And it's nothing like you would imagine when you're a fashion student, because the real life experience is completely different from what you're taught in school, in a way. So yeah, it was an interesting start to my career. It was fearless, that's for sure, but a bit naive, but it worked. So absolutely. Here you go.
Absolutely. I mean, I just want to say, like, kudos to you for, like, I mean, taking such a risk, but I feel like a calculated and, like, strategic one at that. So, I mean,
well, without knowing, I think maybe it was subconscious, because, like I said, my English was very bad and my portfolio was not exactly polished. Let's put it that way. But, you know.
No, but I mean, it's amazing. Works. So can you take us, I guess, from your transition to working in fashion design for quite some time to your business now? Mercer 7 is like your baby, your business. Can you sort of talk a little bit about that transition and what's behind the name Mercer 7?
So Mercer 7 means, so Mercer, obviously it has a connection to New York with the famous Mercer Street. But also it means dealer of fine fabrics. And number 7 is, you know, obviously really positive number in so many cultures. But it also means, you know, collaborations and collective consciousness. And I feel like this name was perfect. And the reason I came up with it and how I came up with it, I was talking to my friend David. He's one of my best friends in New York. And I'm like, I'm trying to come up with a name. He's like, why don't you just write down on a piece of paper your favorite names? Don't think about it. Just come up with your favorite locations, favorite, I don't know, anything you want, favorite words. And Mercer was one of them, and number seven was one of them too. So I put two and two together. So that's how it was born. But in terms of what it meant, you know, as a stay-at-home mom at the time, every time I would make an order, especially high street order, I would see something on the website, and what I would receive would be completely different in terms of its quality and the fit. And I just remember being always quite disappointed in what I ordered. And the seed was planted in a way, and I kind of thought of myself, how cool would it be to have this website or a, you know, women's wear platform where busy women, whether you're a mom or a busy woman, you know, juggling your business or going to an office or doing both motherhood and work, or one of them, you know, going to a website where you know that there will be a curated edit, you know you can rely on it, it will be around capsule wardrobes, meaning, you know, you could mix and match things to suit your lifestyle, and chances are you're not going to be disappointed with your purchase, because who has time for returns nowadays, right? I know that I didn't have time to go to a post office and return things. So yeah, I just wanted to create something that women would go to time and time again, and most importantly, they would invest something that had longevity to it, something that was versatile, something that was timeless in a way as well. Yeah, so that was the aim in the beginning.
Absolutely. And just knowing you and following you on Instagram and seeing your like community that you've obviously done such a good job creating online, like what is that relationship like on a day-to-day basis for you?
I think I communicate with my audience a lot. I reply to tons of emails daily. I receive you know, emails from women, for example, if they're not sure about the sizing or if they're looking at something in particular, almost as a virtual stylist, I feel like, or a sales assistant, they're like virtual sales assistant in a way. So yeah, I think, you know, I do have a very engaged community, almost behind the scenes, because the amount of emails I reply, you don't see them, because they maybe are shy to comment on posts. So everything happens behind the scenes. And I'm really grateful. I love receiving emails from my followers.
Absolutely. Like in so many ways, I feel like you're almost that like style consultant for them in a lot of ways. And I know when you and I initially spoke, we sort of touched on running your account like a business. Can you sort of talk a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was never a vanity project. Like Instagram was never a vanity project for me. From the get-go, I started with almost like a business plan. I want to say business plan for creatives. I got this book, brilliant book called What's the Difference That Makes a Difference by Yvonne Fuchs. And she, it's a great, great startup, especially if you're creative and you don't like going into like Excel spreadsheets and things like that. I always recommend this book because it just kind of makes you visualize what your business will be, and it narrows down your niche, your ethos, your beliefs, what you'd like your business to echo, I guess. And yeah, that's how it started. And in the beginning, I was not sharing pictures of myself. I directed this fashion film, and I styled models, and I had makeup artists, because I thought this is what it would be, like me curating collections and doing photo shoots on models rather than, it didn't even cross my mind that I could be in front of camera, because I'm not a model. I always worked behind the scenes. Like, you know, to me it was, I don't know, borderline a bit cheesy to be in front of the camera and just kind of pretend that I was a model. I don't know, maybe it sounds wrong, but that's how I felt. And I remember the turning point was when one of the brands that, it was a brand called Me&M, they contacted me and they're like, oh, we would love for you to curate a little edit for us. And I'm like, oh, that would be amazing. And I was so excited. And I remember asking, so who will be the model? Like, oh, you will be the model. And I was like, so taken by it. And I just, I don't know. I just felt really uncomfortable with the thought, but I went with the flow and I did it. And I remember sharing pictures, some of the first pictures on Instagram of me wearing like one of the coats, or, you know, I think it was another shot was of me wearing a Breton top and a leather trousers. And I remember at that time already powering my website through affiliate program. I remember my sales kind of like tripled that month. And I think that what was my turning point, where I was like, okay, right, I need to show my face. I need to be in front of the camera a bit more. I need to kind of show people the person, I guess, a founder behind this account. And I started to be a bit more personal instead of, you know, welcome to Mercer 7. We are having a great day today. Like, it was not anymore that kind of formal approach. It was more of a, hey guys, today I was thinking about, I don't know, workwear. And it was the we turned into I. And I think this was a turning point for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also speaking to just in the last, you know, many years, how the industry has evolved too. And right, it's centering around more of like the person, the founder, the business person, and sort of sharing more. But I think you do it really well. So it's just, it's interesting to hear that perspective from you. So how and where do you draw the line around sharing your personal life online? I know you are a mom to a boy and a girl, like you have your family life. How do you go about handling that?
So I think day to day, I don't really share that much about personal life. Obviously, whenever I go to a school pickup and just kind of like a school mom life vibe, I suppose. So I would share like outfits. I would, you know, run out to go pick up my kids or back. But then weekends, I feel like I share a bit more around my family life. And I, especially during the lockdown, I shared a bit more because, you know, we're at home. I'm not going to be polished all the time, and neither I want to. I always try to be as authentic. Well, not try. Try, it's a weird word, I feel like. It just naturally, you show your real life with your audience. It's not in your face, but I think the little snippets that I do share, I'm really proud of being a mom and kind of running my own business and having family life. So yeah, I share little snippets and I don't mind them, but it's not overwhelming and it's mostly on stories. And, you know, I kind of watch who watches my stories and things as much as I can. Obviously, you cannot control everything. But when it comes to my grid, you know, they make an appearance maybe twice or three times a year on special occasions. But yeah, it's kind of, you know, all in small doses, I suppose. And it's all very balanced in a way. And I think my audience really respects that as well.
Okay, so Erna, when I think about you, when I think about Mercer 7 and your platform and following you on Instagram, my mind immediately goes to capsule wardrobes. So can you talk to us a little bit about how do we go about building a capsule wardrobe?
So I feel like to me, featuring like outfit of the day was simply unrealistic. And it's always about how you style and maximize each piece of clothing you own and making kind of like the most out of your wardrobe. And, you know, with capsule wardrobe, it consists of a few essential items of clothing that don't go out of fashion, right? And they should be interchangeable in order to kind of maximize the number of outfits that you can create, and which is why it's best to create your capsule wardrobe from predominantly like monochrome color palette. That's why you always see me, you know, in neutrals, in my monochromes, in my black and white and gray, because it's, you know, it's so easy to add those seasonal pieces and kind of build that what essentially what it is, a uniform, your everyday uniform. And you can wear it lots of different ways. And this is what capsule, you know, wardrobe is about. It's almost like a puzzle of, I always say, you know, treat your capsule wardrobe as a puzzle. Everything needs to slot together, work together, and you can mix and match because, you know, when you wake up in the morning, especially, you know, we're moms, I don't have time to build, you know, to kind of put together new outfits constantly. I need something very easy. Everything works together. Boom. Done.
Love that. I actually love the analogy for calling it a puzzle. It makes so much sense to me.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And then when it comes to like spending money on great staples, like what is your take? Do we need to spend a lot to find these timeless pieces?
So, I mean, regarding a budget, of course, depends what you can afford, right? I always say shop smarter, wait for those sales. For example, somewhere like the Outnet that sells previous seasons, it's a good way to shop as well. Or just wait for sales. If you want to shop high street, make sure you only invest in timeless pieces like a trench coat or a blazer. But pay attention to fabrics. What content is the fabric? What is it? Is it merino wool? Is it a cotton blend? Or is it 100% acrylic? In which case you try to avoid that. Because the thing is, I believe in price per wear. So essentially, like if you are spending, let's say £20 on the top, right? In the long run, after a couple of washes, it might, I don't know, get out of shape, or it will lose elasticity, or the newness to your to the piece that you bought for £20. So you, the next month, you end up buying another piece for £20 and another piece. So for me, price per wear is a biggie, because if you spend £100 for that one jumper, you don't have to rebuy it constantly because it will serve you longer. And yeah, and this is what capsule wardrobe is about, essentially, like spending money on those timeless quality pieces rather than fast fashion items that will kind of, you know, end up in the back of your shelf in a way.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Okay.
So, shop smartly.
Shop smarter. Love that.
Yeah,
and smarter. What are some of your favorite high street brands?
So some of my favorites, I think my go-to every time somebody, you know, asks for more accessibly priced items, I think for me, it will always be places like Kohl's, places like Arquette. I really like Another Stories as well. So yes, I think, you know, in high street, I would say, yeah, Kohl's, Arquette, Another Stories. Sometimes Mango, especially now they're pivoting towards sustainability a lot. And they also have kind of curvy plus size collection as well, which looks amazing. So yeah, some Mango things are good. Some smaller brands as well are brilliant. And places like Philippa K might be not 100% high street, but their quality is great and it's not as expensive as some of the other, you know, more luxury items. Like almost pay attention to mid-range brands as well, because sometimes when they go on sale, they hit that high street mark when it comes to pricing.
Okay, love that. And then on the flip side, I guess, what are some favorite luxury brands and ones that you think are worth investing when it comes to a capsule wardrobe?
So I really love Acne Studios. I really love Totem. Own quite a few pieces from Totem, actually. I love Joseph. I love, you know, YSL and Celine, of course, and Jill Sander and, you know, designers like that. But I think my day-to-day wardrobe definitely consists of, you know, Totem, Acne, Commando. I love their leather leggings, for example. And they're not that expensive, but the quality is brilliant. So, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, those brands that are known for their quality, for sure.
I'm going to echo you on Totem, by the way, because I am living in their stretch legging, the one that's like, it's a skinny leg.
The one with the zip.
One with the zip. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, I got that.
They are, they're no, so them. Good. I literally live in them. And as a mom, they're comfy. I can wear them and like dress them up or down. So.
Well, exactly. And this is the whole point behind, you know, capsule wardrobe, where you can, it's kind of a day to night approach to things and how you can elevate the very simple outfit and make it your own and make it a bit more modern, I suppose. I also love brands. Yeah, I also love, you know, brands like Sandro. One of my blazers from Sandro, I own it for 11 years. One of my first purchases when I moved to London. I still got it. I wore it religiously. And I think the only thing that's you know, a bit gone off is the lining that I need to go to a tailor to fix, but that's about it. And I've been wearing it, you know, weekly. So yeah, so there are so many gorgeous brands out there, but yeah, Totem is one of my faves.
Okay, cool. And then what are some like key accessories that you feel like can change up the look and feel of an outfit in an instant?
So I think the right shoes or jewelry can elevate any simple look. And I'm loving my simple, more statement pieces at the moment. For example, YSL always did some great like jewelry pieces. I also love a vintage Chanel, like even Chanel brooch or something on your blazer can elevate a plain blazer and make it a bit more special. Also like chunky chains, my friend Anissa Soika's line is brilliant. And also accessible, I think, great quality. Also, my friend Laura always collaborates with Sora Jewelry, and they make some really great statement pieces. So yeah, I think a jewelry can really elevate your look. But another accessory that I cannot live without are sunglasses.
Yes,
I just
always
need them. I cannot live without them. Sunglasses is my number one. I can leave my house without anything, but sunglasses is a must.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. And then is there a correct outfit formula in your eyes?
I think whatever makes you more confident, whatever you feel confident in, there is no right or wrong. If you try something on and you feel deep inside confidence and you know when you've got that confidence, this is the piece. So for me, it's always will be a bit of leather, a bit of tailoring, and, you know, playing with proportions. So whether it's skinny leather leggings with an oversized blazer and a cashmere, you know, roll neck underneath, or a white t-shirt, for somebody it could be, you know, a dress. You know, everybody's got their comfort zone, and I think stick to that.
Okay, I love that answer so much. And talking about shopping smarter, I have to ask, because we're getting in the thick of the holiday season, we're approaching all of like the heavy holiday sales. Do you have any shopping tips for like shopping smarter during the holiday season?
So during sales, don't kind of get distracted by all the sales. I know it's very easy. You know, throughout the year, I always advise my clients and my audience, you know, during the year, you've got an eye on something. For example, you got an eye on a pair of shoes, right? Go to the, let's say if it's Net-a-Porter or Mytheresa or Arquette, go to that pair of shoes specifically and see if it's on sale. Instead of kind of faffing about and trying to go through all of the sales by yourself and, you know, going through millions of, you know, items, do go to pieces that you had an eye on throughout the year. And I think that's the, you know, the clever way of shopping. Just buy things that you actually really, really want that are on your wish list. And another way, when you go to, you know, massive retail websites, make sure to use the filter button, you know, the filter option. Filter it by colors, filter it by your size, instead of wasting time and energy on, you know, gazillion of pieces that will be thrown at you. Yeah, just use that filter as much as you can.
I love that. Did you hear that, ladies? No going rogue. Like, keep your eyes on the prize.
Your eyes on the prize. Exactly. I love that.
Okay. Amazing. Erna, this was such a fun convo. As a last like word of wisdom or a tip of advice, what do you want to leave our audience with today?
So I've got a few. One would be, everything will be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end. I love that.
Love kind that of, quote, you know, yes.
Yeah, it's such a good one, isn't it? And another one is actually, I remember interviewing Rachel Zoe, this American stylist you're probably very familiar with.
Love her.
And I remember she said, and I asked her, what's your piece of advice? And something that she said really stuck with me, and it was, take one day at a time. Because when you try to do everything at once, things fall through the cracks. And also, you cannot be all things to all people.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. I feel like I needed to hear that this week, so thank you.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Erna, what's next for you? Anything exciting coming up for you? Anything you want to share with us?
Well, I cannot, I always say when people say, oh, I cannot say it yet, but it's going to be great. But yeah, I've got a few collaborations, like design collaborations coming up, and I might launch something next year. So yeah, cannot talk about it too much, but yeah, stay tuned.
Fair. We'll be on the lookout. And where can everyone follow you, find you, and keep up with you?
It would be amazing if you could follow me on Mercer7 Official over on Instagram. And also you can subscribe to my website, which is Mercer7.com. I often, you know, do edits, and I've got Christmas
edit
coming up. Yeah, I've got my Christmas gift guide, which is one of the highlights of the year. It's a good one. It's men's, kids, women's, you name it, I got it.
Okay, perfect. We will be perusing that. So thank you. Thank you again for coming on and being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been lots of fun. Thank you. And I'll see you on the other side in the real world.
Perfect. I am very much looking forward to that. Thank you, Erna. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you found value from this episode, please share with a friend and tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast. We always love to hear your feedback, and we will catch you on the next episode.